Welcome along, everyone, to the Rugby Pass podcast. This is the Short Ball with Scotty and James McConie in with us today. No Millsy. Don't know where Millsy's gone, Jimbo.
You don't know?
Don't know where he's gone.
Surely he's gone somewhere nice. I'm sick of all the Instagram, Facebook photos of people in Bali and Fiji. They can piss right off.
Well, today is July the 18th here in New Zealand anyway, and yes, most of our friends, James, are either sunning themselves in a Pacific island or on the powder this week.
They're on the white powder down, and the upper white middle class holiday is big at this time of year to go skiing, come back with an accent, be a bit more plummy in the way they speak. Instead of saying room, they say rim.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to rim with you. That's what they say.
You've said that meant to me before, actually.
Well, I mean, you're a good man to room with.
Thanks very much. Quarterfinal time, and the Chiefs playing the Hurricanes, a repeat of what we saw at FMG Stadium. Well, maybe a repeat of what we saw at FMG Stadium last Friday night. First things first, did the Chiefs blow this by not putting some of their best players on the park and maybe winning that game by 23 points with a bonus and then being at home this weekend where they have won 21 of their last 22 games?
So you're saying play Damien, rest him the next week?
No, I'm just saying play Damien full stop. Why does he need a rest?
He has to, I think.
Why?
But he's been, that's been, they've been told it's one of those.
There were other dispensations made for other players.
Oh, well,
why Damien?
I guess that's what they've done. They've played by the rules and said you're going to rest. But anyway, look, it's happened now.
It has,
I don't think, even though there was a chance, a sniff of them getting the 24-point victory, I think what happened was probably a fair result. It was a cracking game. Mm-hmm. And the great thing that the Chiefs will take out of it is the confidence they have in their pack now, because if you go back to previous incarnations and clashes between these two teams, you know, the Chiefs with those with the creative subbing of props, can you remember that back in the cake tin?
Okay.
There's none of that anymore in this lineup. They're quite happy with who they're running with. And Mitchell Karpik, who's good on the carpet, he is the guy who probably could have started this week. But now, of course, you bring back the number one guy, Sam Kane, Karpik's on the bench, and you've got no problem with your bench either.
I don't think you could have put Kane on the bench because he's been out of rugby so long. I saw him on Friday night. He's lost a lot of condition. He looks like he's dropped about 5 kilograms for starters. I mean, he's dropped a knee as well in the meantime. He's proposed to his partner.
Congratulations, Sam and Hattie.
Well played. But he comes back. I think that was the only place you could play him as a starter rather than coming in off the bench. Mitch Karpik last week was sensational.
Yes.
He was sensational.
He was. That was one of those performances where, you know, how he was the junior player who everyone was raving about, and then he disappeared for a while and they weren't quite sure. He shaved off his amazing locks.
He did.
And when you lose that blonde hair, sometimes people don't notice you as much, you know. And now he is back, and that performance was that big kind of like, hey, just remember me, the guy who's got it all. He's studying to do his law degree. He's a well-rounded individual. He just won the Chiefs Mana Award for work in the community. Oh, what a man. He could marry my daughter at the right age if he's, you know, he is that sort of guy. He's
you can't
the guy.
Go arranged marrying with Chiefs. This is, you can't do that.
I can do that.
I know you, actually, you can do that.
Yeah.
I know, because you're a Chiefs man. But, I mean, still, Mitch Karpik, of all the Chiefs.
Mitch Karpik is a son-in-law. I'd adopt Mitch Karpik. I would, and in fact, I'm quite happy to go out and say, Mitch Karpik, you can, when you're back in Auckland, come stay with me. I just want to be around you. I think you're a good bloke.
You can't know.
And his eyebrows move like a Muppet.
Yeah,
as well.
They do.
Like,
yeah, they do.
They've got their life
all
of their
once,
own. I just want to see him speak, and he goes,
okay, this isn't creepy at all. And as we all know from listening to you for a long period of time, what is your line when it comes to stalking? It's not stalking.
If you love them.
Thank you very much. Yep. Mitch Karpik will be on the bench alongside Jesse Paretti, which means a bit of a turnaround on the Chiefs and the loose forwards, Liam Messam at number 8, Sam Kane. Lachlan Boshier is another we need to discuss. He made a million tackles last week against the Canes. Lachlan Boshier, to me, is the 1-7 that you should put a circle around right now and say, it's happening for you. It's happening for you in 2023.
That's what I think too with Lockie. He's the guy who is same size as McCaw, similar qualities to McCaw. You don't want to mention McCaw in the same sentence as him, especially twice. It's a real curse. Three times it's even worse. But he's got something
three
there.
Three times a Richie.
I love you, Lockie. I do love him. But he's got something there that I think, if you look at players around the traps, he has just worked away at his craft. You know, you've got to do that. Sometimes you can't just be the Rico Ioane sensation. There are people who are just plugging away doing those hard yards.
Got the hard yards. Hard yards. I'll tell you what else is great about up last weekend, and this is going to be a battle to savour again. Anton Leonard-Brown. I have a feeling Anton Leonard-Brown just shifted his defensive role slightly last weekend because he was chopping Nani Lamapi every time Lamapi got the ball. Anton Leonard-Brown seemed to be there or thereabouts. I think it was a defensive ploy. One of the best defensive efforts I've seen from Anton Leonard-Brown. They'll need a repeat from that, but they also welcome back Charlie Ngatai, so you get all of his organisation as well. And the Hurricanes have had to shift Jordy Barrett back into the midfield this week, which I think is problematic for them. And Wes Huerssen is somehow alive and bracketed on the bench.
I know. Huerssen is back. Huerssen source. He is... well, I actually think... Let's talk about Lamapi first. That midfield was very crowded on the other night at Waikato FML Stadium. And if you... Can they do that again in Wellington, though? Because this is the thing. It was a wet track. There was just a little bit of extra pressure on.
Yeah.
I just feel at home... It's a different Nani.
It was a different Nani at home the week before, after that loss to the Brumbies, and he came out against the Blues and absolutely tore them a new one. It was a really interesting turnaround performance because you thought that Nani had found his attacking groove, and as had the Canes. And that's what we were looking for after that run of 10 straight wins. They just seemed to have lost their attacking mojo. So you thought against the Chiefs, here's an opportunity. Go out there, Johnny Fauli, who hasn't started a lot of games, maybe not as a dominant presence as Charlie Ngatai, and yet no way through, no punch.
Mm. There's one positional change that you noted when we were off air, and that was Jordy Barrett in there at number 13. You don't like that, but I like it.
Yeah, you can like it as much as you like, but the facts speak for themselves.
Yep.
He's the best fullback in the Hurricanes, and his relationship with Beauden Barrett, when Bodie's playing 10, is more important as a 15 than it's going to be at centre, and the combination's better.
Do you think they're psychic? Do you think that when one of them gets a knock, the other one goes, oh!
Yes,
I do. You know, like the twin thing?
Yes, I do. Also, when Scotty Barrett gets a knock in a Crusaders game, they both feel it.
They both feel it.
And Kane gets a headache from it.
And they go down. They sort of, happened? Oh, Scotty. Scotty, get back up. I can feel you. I think the...
Are you telling me that the best Hurricanes team at the moment to play this game, if Wes Huerssen was not knocked into next week on Friday night, would he have started at centre in this game?
I don't know, but all I'm saying is I do like Jordy at centre for a couple of reasons. One, he's starting to use that big body of his. You know, we've got a 6'6" player there who was kind of Mr. Lanky for a couple of years, but he's gone away and he's had that milk straight from the vat.
Non-pasteurised.
He's on his kombucha or whatever. They're growing the drinks out the back there of the Barrett Farm. And also not shying away from Robin's lovely scones. The three ingredient scones, all you need is... grated cheese, flour, and Greek yogurt. That's it. It's a really good recipe. I think it's not Robin Barrett's. It's probably Joe Seager or Annabelle Langbein or one of the greats.
That's a total cougar recipe. That now.
And also, I was just going to say his passing. I think he's the best passer of the ball in rugby.
I've got an issue around Jordy Barrett's height at centre. Okay, and don't get me wrong. We know he's tall. But you're coming up against guys who are much shorter, and we have seen already this season that Jordy Barrett rushing out of the line can get a bit high on his tackles.
Yes.
There are going to be cards in this quarterfinal. If last week was anything to go by, the body count was higher than the scoreline, there are going to be some hits and misses in this quarterfinal.
That's actually a very good reason probably not to play him there, because, you know, if you are worried about that, the intensity of the game, one slip up, and I'll tell you what, those tackles that don't seem too bad in real time, once they get those wonderful Sky Sports super slow-mos on them, they look devastating. Totally incriminating, aren't they? Sky?
Rugby should not be refereed in slow motion.
No.
We're going to get on to Sanzar on the short ball today because they've come out swinging too, and we'll explain why in just a moment. Hurricanes, to me, the matchup here, I think it's the marquee matchup of the entire quarterfinal series, is going to be Damien McKenzie coming back against Beauden Barrett. Yeah. Now, I spoke to Damien McKenzie last week before the game. I said, on a scale of 1 to 10, how badly do you want to be out there playing this game? He said 11.
Wow.
So I know that they've got to deal with their rest weeks. I think the rest weeks are... I think they undermine Super Rugby. Now, I'm sure the All Blacks will always get their own way. Of course they'll always get their own way. They're the biggest show in town. No one's going to argue with the All Black coach and what he wants. That's fine, but you undermine the integrity of the competition. We're in a final round game in a local derby, which we always say are the biggest games for New Zealand fans. You take away your number one, first five, you put his brother in there, who's hardly had a start this year, and expect him to perform the same miracles. It was unfair on Marty McKenzie. It was unfair on Damien McKenzie, who wanted to play the game, and all because of another team that's not even involved in this contest.
Yeah.
That's rubbish. That's rubbish.
But it happens. That's the way of the world. It's the reason it's the reason why the Crusaders succeed. They've got so many All Blacks, 13 if you're being even conservative, 10 in the last All Blacks squad, and that's not including, obviously, Israel Dagg, who was out, and there was another injury too. So, you know, these are guys are frontline players, and the reason why they survive is because when they have to rest players, it's, hey, it's okay, we've got 9 other All Blacks, it's fine. That's
exactly right. That's Chiefs fine. Don't.
And the Chiefs don't. And we've always run on the sniff of an oily rag. We're just a ragtag team of misfits. Someone should make a Hollywood movie about them.
You are totally pulling the underdog tag here, aren't you?
They're total underdogs.
They're underdogs in this game.
Run the numbers. Who's on a maximum NZRU contract in the Chiefs? Sam and Brody?
Possibly. But I'm not worried about it. It's, All Blacks aren't the ones winning Super Rugby titles. You've got a squad of 38 blokes.
Yeah, that's
it
right.
It come down to just the All Blacks.
Well, I mean, you're saying the Crusaders aren't the favourites without their, with their 13.
The Crusaders are the favourites. They're top of the table by some distance. Yeah. But I get your point you're making. Yeah, yeah. But I want to get back to this matchup.
Okay.
Beauden Barrett needs a big game. I think this is the game and this is the matchup where a guy like Beauden Barrett says, I'm going to put you back in your box.
Yeah.
Just package you up. Just...
He's quite. You could put Damien in a little box.
You could put him in a really small box.
You could put him in a little trunk, and you could just tuck him away. And you could put him in your hand luggage. I reckon if you had one of the ones, you know how some people cheat with the hand luggage. They've got it's way too big, and you go, that's not hand luggage, but there's a reason because Damien's in there. I don't know. That's a bad example.
I think he's like a $4.50 courier post box, not the big size that you put dead bodies in when you're shipping them around the country, but the smaller size.
He would have to have the flexibility of one of those Mongolians from Cirque du Soleil. Like, that's what we'd be asking of Damien. But he's got everything else. When you look at how far he's come this season, because he's been such a project, you know, first year really playing first five. He's had a a great All Blacks test under the roof.
Yes.
Just that one that where he's just got over the... That was a pretty good All Blacks test. I thought that was a great All Blacks test from Damien. And and so he's grown and grown with the Chiefs. Now, Beauden, however, seems to me like the alpha male. He'll be smarting from last week, throwing that intercept pass, a bit telegraphed. Brad Weber read that all day. Mm-hmm. So you think Beauden Barrett won't summon his inner Conrad Smith, who is kind of like that guy, the ghost of Conrad Smith, the most competitive man in the world. He still lingers in that culture of that team, and I'm sure Beauden will be taking it personally.
I'm so looking forward to that matchup. I'm just going to go, you mentioned Brad Weber. I thought he was sensational last Friday night. The TJ Perenara thing concerns me a little bit because if Brad Shields is not in this team, he's likely to be given the skipper's armband. I think, and I love this kid, and speaking of competitive, I think that would be the worst thing for TJ Perenara, having to captain the Hurricanes in this quarterfinal.
Because he's a yapper?
Because he's so competitive, because he wants to question every decision, because it means so much to him. Sometimes you need, as a skipper, just to be able to step back, calm down, get into it. But you're asking a guy who's right in the mixer all the time, who's aerobically screwed, to then try and have a deal with the referee. And I think that's really tough on him. I really do.
Who, ideally, if you're going the way of modern rugby, you'd be subbing your halfback at the right time. So really, I guess if it's a tight game, your captain is most important in that final quarter. Is he going to play that final quarter? Look, I just think that when you look at that star quality in the Hurricanes, it's whether their forwards can function. They didn't really do that for them the other night in Hamilton. So can the Chiefs just keep on going? Sam is back. He's just got engaged. Just imagine his nostrils will be flaring. It'll be a great time.
From the engagement?
Yeah. Just excitement.
Yeah, that's really true.
Flared nostrils.
Jeff Tuomang Allen brings up 100 Super Rugby games as well, so something to celebrate for the Hurricanes. I think it's great that they've got another milestone to bring up too here, and someone who's been a great team man for them for a long period of time. We switch our focus now, though, Jimmy. Quarterfinal weekend to the Crusaders taking on the Sharks. I like the Sharks. They're a limited rugby team, but they do wonders with what they do.
They have impressed me this season. I actually enjoy watching Sharks rugby. It feels like it's a return to the halcyon days, the Tib Blanche, the Joubert.
André Joubert,
what a runner. Your mum met André Joubert.
Yeah,
remember?
He did. Actually, we spoke to him on a radio show once. That's right, André Joubert, he gave us a call. Amazing.
What a gentleman. Part of the original member of the Handsome Man Club as well, André Joubert.
And Hugh Bladen was a great fan.
Hugh Bladen, Joubert, Moliaina, probably not playing in the same game. It doesn't matter. I think that... he's not playing.
No.
I think that the Sharks backline, somebody there is kicking it at old school and just saying, this is how we play in Durban and we're going to carry it on. And that's the big threat for the Crusaders, really.
The Crusaders have outkicked most teams they've played this year.
Yeah.
And the only two losses they've had have when they've been outkicked by the opposition. The Hurricanes outkicked them. The Highlanders outkicked them. The Sharks are a big kicking team. In fact, no one kicks more than the game. Robert Dupreer, Jean-Luc Dupreer. This is a team that throws the fewest passes per game this season, the Sharks. And yet, Jean-Luc Dupreer leads all comers and all floats this season. So even though they don't try a lot out wide, they're still making a lot of metres through the middle and then looking for the pop ball. When you've got guys like Koo and Bosch who can run off you, and you've got big ball runners around the rest of that pack, I think that they're a team that can trouble the Crusaders if they find a way to attack the heart.
And that's the thing, I guess. I mean, from what I've seen, it's mainly highlights reel of the Sharks, and I've really enjoyed the tries they've scored. If you consider one of the great, because they've got great ball running loose forwards, as you mentioned, one of the great tries against the Crusaders this year was Sam Kane, running about 45 metres, was it, to dot down. If they can get in behind there, that's where the danger lies, I think, for the Crusaders. You know the players better than me, but they've shown that they can do that.
They have. I'm backing the Crusaders. I don't think the Sharks are going to come here and spring an upset on AMI Stadium. I just mean to say that this is a real chance for their staff to come up with a genuinely clever game plan. They won't take them in the midfield, the Crusaders. I think Crotty and Goodhue have been a vault there. They're not going to take them out wide, I don't think, with Bridge and Sidetamani Valu operating the way they did last week. Their one option is to kick and kick well, play for territory, because very few teams have been able to pressure the Crusaders territorially this year. It's been the Crusaders who were able to turn the tables, get down the other end, go to line-out. 17 tries the Sharks have scored from line-outs this season, 34 the Crusaders.
How good is Richie Mwanga as well?
Wow.
Just a great Mwanga, sorry. He's such a good player and so much pace as well. That's something we've sort of only just started to realise, or I have anyway. The one thing I think is that if you look back to the last time the Crusaders had a defeat of note, it was the Lions, wasn't it, last year? They've lost one or two this year, but I mean the Lions... British and Irish Lions came over, beat them with the box kick, the high ball. Maybe that's the key. If it's a cold, old, windy, wet night, maybe that's going to put it in the air.
And if David Harvilli is playing at fullback, whether they go through Israel Dagg, I'm not entirely sure. But 6 weeks ago, you would have peppered Harvilli with high balls. But he's got better. I think he went away and realised that I couldn't catch cold at the moment. In fact, halfway through one game, I think against the French Barbarians, where he dropped several, he walked in at halftime and said, I've got to fix this. Stops now.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's maybe dropped one since. So they've certainly shored that up. The one thing I love about the Crusaders and the way they're playing at the moment too is the impact that Ronan O'Gara has obviously had around their set-piece strike. They are scoring some of the prettiest first-phase tries you will see ever at the moment, off line-out ball, off scrum. Man, they have come up with some moves. He's got the Henry Winkler playbook.
Yeah.
Ronan O'Gara.
He's a tactician. We're talking about the Fonz there, Henry Winkler.
Remember from the Waterboy, the playbook.
Oh, the playbook.
Yeah.
I tell you what, the one great thing about Ronan O'Gara that I've heard is that he wanted to bring back the spiral kick, and I think, good on you, Ronan.
Yeah.
Never dispense with it altogether, because how many kicks have we seen charged down recently? It's an abomination, really. Should never get a kick charged down. And in the end, you've got to adjust for the charges. You realise they're coming for you, so you can't go through your perfect mechanics of, okay, this is the drop punt. Just spiral it out of there.
Yeah.
Spiral it the hell out of there. Get rid of it.
When was the last time you saw a spiral in a game of Super Rugby? A genuine spiral kick.
Carter used to do it quite a bit, so maybe a couple of years ago.
It's a long time without a spiral.
I'm sure Damien's done one. I think he doesn't mind a spiral.
I just mind you, Stephen Pedalfetta did one, but it was wrong. He was trying to banana kick it into touch and went other way. But yeah. I mean, there's a great metaphor for the Blues season in general. Are you going the Crusaders here? Can you see them being topped by the Sharks at all? Long way to come for the Sharkies.
I'm going Crusaders. Naturally, I'm going Chiefs, but I'm kind of worried about the Canes just because of their pedigree. So yeah, Chiefs, and I think Crusaders will win that one.
We go across to Sydney, where the Waratahs got upped by the Brumbies in their final game. Therefore, meaning they are unlikely to host a semi-final. Well, they can't really. That's got to be frustrating for Daryl Gibson. That's a Waratahs team that should have put the Brumbies away and put them away comfortably if they really wanted to stamp their finals credentials on this tournament.
Yeah.
They're going to host the Highlanders, who they defeated, but remember, they defeated the Highlanders, who had Tevita Nabura red-carded and Aaron Smith sinbin. So they pretty much played a 13- or 14-man Highlanders team for the majority of that match.
Yes.
They should know that, and the Highlanders, I think, just got something of their mojo back in their run home against the Rebels last weekend. I was calling that game, and for a while there, you thought to yourself, man, there is zero gas left in the tank, all the changes, young guys coming through, but they just looked as if they had no energy. Then all of a sudden, Waisaki Naholo doing Waisaki Naholo things. Kane Hamilton, I thought, deputised really well for Aaron Smith. Tay Walden made 18 tackles in that game at second 5-8 and three jackals. He was amazing. So maybe, just maybe, there's life in the mongrel yet.
And also, the Highlanders can consider themselves lucky. I mean, you're playing a Waratahs team that does seem a little out of sorts. So, you know, are they even the best Australian team at the moment? Is it the Brumbies, 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 is, or? So maybe it is them.
Well, they're not there.
No.
So the Tars are there. The Tars have got Folau. We know what Folau can do. They've got Beal. We know what Beal can do. Still no Michael Hooper. Michael Wells has been a loose forward, largely gone unnoticed in this competition. Maybe it's just the New Zealand bias. We've got so many loose forwards that we talk about here. Michael Wells has been a beast for the Waratahs. And again, I think just as it is for the Sharks, if the Waratahs want to win this, they've got to bash the Highlanders up. It's a team you need to – it's like a steak. You've got to just give that a little bit of tenderizing before you try and do your Folau things and your Beal things.
Then do your salt bay then?
Yeah, you salt bay it. You've got to salt bay the Highlanders just like that.
And then chuck it on the
sizzle.
Grill.
Then sizzle.
Yeah, it's a good ploy that. I wonder as well, just looking at, you bring Smith and Smith back.
Auto Glass.
Yes, Auto Glass. And obviously the Smiths, these charming men, don't make me sing again, but
Oxford bicycle.
The Smiths come back, and that was a guitar riff by Johnny Marr. Anyway, hey, look, they come back, but the thing is that if you you're bringing, I think Aaron Smith has been arguably the best player in the comp for most of Super Rugby, certainly the most influential. Some of his passes are just as good as a line break, way better. So anyway, so you bring him back. Ben from accounts is next level when it gets to this time of the year. And Waisaki running the other day, just blitzing it, that reminded me of the day that I went to Eden Park years and years ago and I saw Joelle Vendieri for the first time live.
Yeah.
And it was like an optical illusion. How can he be running that fast?
When he's that big.
Yeah, he's that big.
Yeah.
What the hell's going on?
So, of all the Waisaki things in that game, the tackle he made right at the end on Jack Maddox to save the game, that, to me, said everything you need to know.
How good.
And how good.
Yeah.
I think that would have done more for the Highlanders than anything else. Here's your star, your out-and-out superstar on the field at that time, who has made the clutch play in the close. And honestly, they would have been fizzed up about that. Aaron Major, Glenn Delaney, all the boys, Clark Gurmity, Mark Hammett, that would have been the one play they said to their fellas, that's how you do it.
Exactly. And there's only a few inches difference between Waisaki's tackle and Johnny Foley's, but Waisaki got it right, so right.
Exactly.
And also, it destroyed them so much that they ended up fighting each other later that night.
Well, yeah, we're going to do that on our news wrap on the short ball in just a moment's time. We do need to cross across the Lions. Juarez!
Yes.
I'm wrapped for the Juarez, although, again, another team that really blew its chances. So imagine if this was in Buenos Aires.
Oh.
It could easily be in Buenos Aires. I mean, 40,000 people at the Estadio.
Behind the cage.
It just would have been very different. I like what the Juarez have done this year. Agustin Crevy is obviously their talisman. Guido Petty has been in outstanding form at lock. You've got guys like Emiliano Buffelli, who scored, I think, 10 tries this season. Tuchelet may not be playing in this game. Sanchez. There are players across the park you can really get behind. That's what I like about the Jaguars. It's been an outing.
The Shadow Pumas, of course, as they could be known. What I like about Creevy is that whenever every time he gets subbed, he always gets subbed on around the hour mark, doesn't he? And he is always annoyed, but he also looks like he can't walk anymore, which is kind of good. So normally
maybe that's why he's annoyed.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn it, I can't walk again.
Yeah, so Creevy, I do like this style. They're the ones who, you know how a new trend will come along, like the offload, okay? Let's say the offload's been around for a while now, but then they'll just do them in ridiculous spaces. It's a real David Copperfield dynamo offload where the hell did that come? That comes straight out of his anus, that one? I mean, I can't work it out. What the hell happened?
Shooting offloads like ping pong balls.
That's
right. I do wonder if the Jaguars are going to meet their match here. I will meet their maker. I suspect they will. Mm. The Lions having Malcolm Marks back, Warren Whiteley back in the mix as well, Ross Cronje. They've got Elton Jankies, who we know can blow hot and cold, but boy, when he's hot, he's hot. And their wingers have been in sensational form. They've scored the second most tries in the competition. At altitude, this is a hard ask for the Jaguars.
It's the Lions' game to lose, really. And they're the hard luck story. If you consider that red card in the final last year, they say you've got to lose the final to win one. Well, they've lost two now. Is that right? Yeah, they've lost the two. And so I actually want them to do well, the Lions. They seem to be the team that have... Yeah, I do want the Lions to do well. They play a great style. And all those guys have stepped up to the mark. When you see how far... And to the marks, in fact, when you think about...
They've stepped up to the marks.
Yeah, they have.
It's great to have Warren Whiteley back. I think Franco Mostert has been one of the players of the season as well. Having Marks back at this time of the year is everything for the Lions. Even last week... You know, he's only fresh back from a massive hamstring injury sustained against the Hurricanes, and there he is leading the team in carries again.
Yeah.
That's the sort of bloke you want. And Warren Whiteley is, without dispute, one of the all-timers. He's just such a champion man. So having those players all back at this time of the year, I think it's a lay-down mazir for the Lions, this one. I really do. As much as I'm a... The Jaguars are my jam, man. I really love them, but... It's not going to happen for them.
Yeah, me gusta los Jaguars también, but it's all about the Lions. I can't speak Afrikaans, sorry.
Oh, I can. Now, let's go straight to a bit of a news wrap on the short ball to finish up today. First of all, the Amanaki Mafi Lapiti Tamani situation. I called that game. I'd heard some rumours that Amanaki Mafi wasn't a very popular member of that team. Not a great decision maker. Bit of a hungus, obviously, when you've carried the ball 250 times in a season. I think that much is pretty
250.
Clear. The thing about Amanaki Mafi in that game, because I hadn't heard this until the week leading into last week's game against the Islanders, And you watched him in the game. He was consistently bagging his teammates, yelling at his team. But it wasn't encouragement. It was always a look around to say, what are you guys doing? Come on, clean out. Do this, do that. And I thought to myself, I haven't seen that in professional rugby in a very long time.
No.
It was literally senior B's club footy stuff where a guy's been dropped down and is trying to, you know, get everyone to come along because he's too good for this team. And I noticed that. I didn't expect that would then lead on to smacking out his teammate. Both of them fined $15,000 or so, and Amanaki Mafi still on bail from the New Zealand courts. He'll head away next year back to Japan, but how does this affect his Japanese contracts? Because they don't take too kindly to guys with criminal records, if indeed he is convicted of injuring with intent to injure.
I know. It's and also, he was the only one who had to show up in court as well. So... That may sort of, because I mean, if it was just a straight out fight, then you'd say, okay, boys, maybe you just have to
kiss and make up,
front the media. But really, to let it go that far says to me that there's, he was probably unpopular for it to end up that far.
Because yeah,
we've seen the two black eyes as well from
Tamani. Yeah, he must have clobbered him.
Absolutely,
allegedly.
Yeah, so. It's not looking too good there. I was just going to say, it reminded me of there was two Newcastle United players, Lee Bowyer, and I was about to Google the other one, sorry. My soccer football knowledge should know that. But they fought together on the field.
Yeah, that's great.
In a game.
Yeah, that's great.
And so that's
the
next step.
I can get behind that.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it, get it over and done with. You know, we've got the Blake Gibson, Rico Ioane incident already this year.
Kieran Dyer was the guy
Dyer.
Fought with. Lee Bowyer and Kieran Dyer fought.
In a game.
Both got red carded. One got sent off. So teammates, yeah.
The Wes Wilson scenario is interesting to me. Last week, as we mentioned earlier, knocked into next week by that Johnny Foley shoulder in the face. He's been bracketed this week. Now, I'm not going to disagree with the medical staff at the Hurricanes here.
Yeah.
But the guy failed his HIA on the night. It was a very public smashing that everyone's seen the vision 100 times and it's pretty sickening to watch. Now, Johnny Foley made that decision in a very split second and it was a bad decision and he injured a guy in a game. Now you've had all week to look at a guy, evaluate the injury, evaluate the optics, for want of a better term, around this, and you still put him as a bracket on the bench. I'm uncomfortable with this. I want to see Wes Wilson play. I don't want to see him not play. But by the same token, I saw what happened to him last week. It's horrible. And when are we going to have some mandatory stand downs in professional rugby?
It used to be 3 weeks in amateur rugby.
Do you know what,
it?
Man? I just say this. If you're going to paint Johnny Foley as the bad guy, as the Hurricanes themselves did through their social media account and their CEO did, calling him quote unquote a loose cannon, then what are you doing even considering playing him this week?
How many times has Johnny Foley been suspended, by the way?
Once before.
So he's made, it doesn't really make him a loose cannon.
Look, he's got a particular style about the way he tackles. He's put on some great shots. Most of them that I've seen have been pretty legal. That's a look, you know. He hits hard. I mean, that's
Kieran Reid hits hard.
My point is this. You know, what sends the worst message? The guy who does that in a split second, or then an organisation putting this guy back in the field a week later? What sends a worse message to people considering whether or not rugby should be the option for their children?
I know what you're saying, and everybody watching and listening knows what you're saying. But I guess we've got to trust the medics, unless of course the medics are a bit like Dr. Nick from The Simpsons.
Hey, everybody! Concussion is just in the mind.
I don't know. Yeah,
and I'm certainly not here to try to discredit any of the medical staff involved. I'm saying, you know, we talk about concussions as if everyone's taking it seriously. No, they're not.
By the way,
I
do a bit of Monty Burns than a.
Yeah,
I
you do. I've heard you, Monty Burns. Yeah. It's fine. Anyway, we'll park that for one moment. Wes Wilson may not play. I don't know. The rest will be up to other people and up to Wilson himself. Finally, Sansa have come out and said they want to see the television match official situation cleared up with the referee making more decisions. So let's first start with what Sansa is. Sansa is a front for the South African, Australian and New Zealand rugby unions with a little bit of Argentina sprinkled in the mix.
Yeah, salt bait.
So technically, Sansa have now got together and the coaches of the Springboks, the Wallabies and the All Blacks have got together and said we need to clean this up. So Sansa, through Andy Marinos, have now said, yes, let's clean it up. We're taking it to World Rugby. This is obviously the unions themselves saying, let's sort this mess out. Okay, now that that's out of the way, does it need to be sorted out?
Yeah, I get where they're coming from. My enjoyment of rugby isn't necessarily affected by I was going to say VAR. I've been watching too much soccer, sorry.
I've watched a lot of TMO. Soccer football.
I'm happy for the TMO to come in and meddle a little bit. As long as the call is correct, you know. I think if it's eliminating a little bit of skullduggery, and I saw a high shot the other day from a clean out. I can't remember what game it was. Was it the Reds? Somebody made a tackle and then went in with a really like a vicious sort of clean out, and it was a card all day. So I don't.
It was Jerome Kainal on Scott Higginbotham in the Blues Reds game.
No, it was a different
early
one.
In the game.
Oh right, no, this was.
I'll give you another example. Mitch Karpik on Brad Shields just this weekend.
Yeah. So look, there are examples where when the TMO is called upon, it actually does, I guess, send that message that, you know, you've got to do things right. But I reckon way before that, if they'd clean up some of the that tackle area, how wide that meter is seems to vary wildly.
Yeah.
You know, so there's people getting cleaned out who are just randomly standing by and they get some shoulder to the head that's not even counted for anything. So, you know, like it's like, but I thought it was a meter. How wide is this meter gap that you're allowed to clean out from? So that's one. And then obviously scrum resets, which have improved a little bit, I guess, but you can still, on certain games, and I remember you commentated one when you almost made light of the fact that, hey, 5 minutes later, 5 minutes and counting, we're still, and when I my-skied through that game and went, what's happened is the time's 30, Fast forward, broken, or no? Yeah. It's a scrum in the same place for five minutes.
Yeah. What was interesting though, everyone goes to the TMO and say, mate, the on-field referee should be making the decisions, right? But then each week the on-field referee is making different decisions.
Mm.
You can't just hang the TMO out to dry. I know a lot of people have talked about Ben Skeen and his involvements in the games. Do you know what? He can't help it if he's TMO in a game where there's a lot of shit going on.
Mm.
He got to get involved. He's got a mandate to do that. In the same breath, Chris Hart, who made his debut as a TMO in the Highlanders Rebels game, didn't get involved at all.
Yeah,
had one decision to make, which is about a forward pass, one make about a grounding over the try, and he had one look at both, made the call, job done. That's fine. But the stakes get higher the higher you go up the chain. And the reporting structures for these referees back into their referees' bosses get more complex the higher you go up the chain. And if you don't make decisions in games, you're marked down for that. So we have to go back and look at the referees themselves, how they're being adjudicated, how they're being trained, how they're being judged by their own people, first of all. Mike Fraser on the weekend in the Hurricanes-Chiefs game blew 6 penalties for leaving your feet at the breakdown.
That's right.
And I haven't seen any all year long.
No, that was, and it seemed so to be his
week,
thing.
Right, a week theme before of the day. That's right. So a theme week before the playoffs, you've got a referee who's suddenly gone. And it's, again, no disrespect to Mike. He obviously may have been told clean up the area, or maybe one of the coaches said so.
But also in the conditions as well.
Right.
I mean, try and.
So now you've got the messiest area of the game where all of a sudden you're getting 5-6 penalties in the game for things that go on in every game and no one's penalised.
Yeah, yeah. I know. And I've actually got sympathy for the referees, but I think if they did clear up those areas, I think, you know, breakdown and scrum in particular, I think for scrums, to be honest, your touch judge should be allowed. Your assistant referee should be allowed on the field, and I don't care how far they have to run, but if you're only refereeing one side of a scrum, then you're not actually refereeing the entire scrum. So I reckon that assistant referees should be allowed on the field for scrums. I've said that for a while.
Oh, well, I think assistant referees should have a more mandated role to play.
That's right.
And I, you know, this is only the 10th year I've said that, but
they're the same qualified player.
Referee. But give every single AR the same job in every single game.
Mm.
And you will start to get consistency of decision-making and consistency of assistance for the referee.
Yeah. And, I mean, there are things, I guess, rugby, we've called back forward passes a lot now because, I mean, I think in league they don't let you do that. So there are certain things, I guess, in rugby that we've clamped down on in the sport, and yet they're still leaving the glaring problems of the sport, where the for the uninitiated or people who haven't watched rugby before, they go, what's the problem here? This breakdown is a mess. It's crazy. It just looks like a massive orgy where everyone's trying to hurt each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've
it's
got
not
scrums.
My kind of orgy.
No, nobody wants that orgy. And then not even the Romans. And they were into some freaky shit.
Vomitoriums.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, vomitoriums. So, and then you've got the scrums, which, let's be honest, just try and sort that out. You've got 3 trained referees out there. Get around that scrum.
Yeah.
You're not needed anywhere else, really.
So, and the finally on the short ball today, so this is what frustrates me with the timing of this. Sanzar have now come out because they've all had a meeting in Singapore, because Sanzar, and a week before the finals, you're talking about clipping the TMO's wings. What are all the TMO's going to be thinking throughout the finals? Don't get involved, or stick to my knitting.
So who we got? Is it Skeen and Ayuba, the ones who quite often go, hey, Jacko, let's go and have a look at this? Is it they like to get in there, don't they?
They've got to get in there. But back to the point where that's their mandate. They've got a mandate to look at foul play.
Mm.
James, it's been a pleasure today.
Hey, thanks very much. It's been great being here. And we've only done 3 songs. So I still didn't get to do my Monty.
Can I do it?
I'll crush you like a paper cup.
Thanks, mate. Make sure you check Rugby Pass for all the quarterfinals Super Rugby this weekend.